Welcome to another podcast from the Ministry of Grace Covenant Church in Austin, Texas, where our purpose is to equip you to love with wisdom, passion, and humility.
First, wash all the car, then wax.
Wax. But what do I have to wash all the car?
Remember, dear, no question.
Yeah, but
right. Wax on, right hand. Wax off, left hand. Wax on, wax off.
What are these?
Japanese sanda.
What do you do with them?
Funny you should ask. Right the circle. Left the circle.
Wait, wouldn't it be easier going back and forth?
But you go circle. Right the circle. Left the circle. Right the circle, left the circle. That. All in the wrist. Wrist up, down. Wrist, all in the wrist. Up, down, long stroke. Very good. Up, down. No, look me, look fence. Show me wax on, wax off. Show me paint the fence.
Cut! Face! Left! Left!
Show me side to side.
Yes! Left! Left! Left!
Show me sand or floor.
Cut! Face! Face! Face!
You know, they've got to make that movie over again, don't you think? It's just been too long. Classic, just a classic, you know, miserable little 98-pound weakling getting, well, in his case, like 89 pounds if he's lucky, getting beat up by the bullies, and he goes to a mentor, Mr. Miyagi, to learn some things about martial arts, and then he'll get his vengeance, you bet. Well, I don't know if about you, but when I watch the clip, when I watch the movie, I find it fascinating. This one little thing. Why didn't Mr. Miyagi just tell him in the first place what he was doing and why? I mean, wouldn't that make for easier, better, more enthusiastic workouts? What is the deal with coaches anyway? Just by, you know, I've had a few coaches like that. I had a coach that if you, for every minute you were late to the gym, you had to do 5 bear crawls around the gym. And sometimes children would show up because their moms got in there late crying because that meant 25 bear crawls. Wouldn't it have been just a lot simpler for him to say, listen, guys, the most important muscle group in this discipline is upper body and shoulders particularly, and there's no faster way to build shoulders than having to do these bear crawls. Now, let's, with hopes of winning, let's do these bear... No, they don't tell you that. No, they leave you dangling thinking it's some form of punishment. And that's what Mr. Miyagi's doing. He's having him do these pointless, you know, what seems to be pointless, monotonous, and painful things, all the while actually training him in martial arts. And I think martial arts are actually more complicated than that. But all that to say is, why didn't he tell him that in the first place? I don't know. But God isn't like that. God is not like that. He wouldn't put us through certain events in life without telling us what the end is. If we know what the end is in life, then we can see how the means are appropriate to that end. And listen, in the way God's orchestrated the world around us, life is purgatory. Life is the place where we prepare to meet God face to face. And what I'd like to do today is do nothing short of tell you how all of life fits together. There. Yeah, I'm glad. I bet you're glad you came. Most of life's big questions will be answered today. Most of how things fit together, and for now, the puzzle that you've been working called life is no longer having to be smashed, you know, the pieces smashed into place. But while not all the pieces fit in here, many of them do. And here's what I'd like for you to consider, this thought about your life. That the purpose of life is this. That you were designed before time to look like Christ. You were designed before time to look like Christ. Here's a promise from God found in Romans. It goes like this. For those who God foreknew, that's you, a follower of Christ, for those who God foreknew, he also predestined to become conformed to the likeness of his son so that he might be the firstborn among many brothers. See the before time part? He foreknew, he also predestined to be conformed to the likeness of his son. So you're supposed to look like Christ. You're supposed to be like Jesus. You're supposed to be like Jesus. And it's kind of campy, but if you can imagine it this way, okay? Picture yourself like an avatar for Jesus. You are the skin of his intellect and his emotions and his will. You are the thing on this planet that works on his behalf while you're here. And you want that. You want to be like Christ in your hardest, on the deepest part of your soul. That's what you want. I mean, if you look at just the highlight reel of Jesus Christ, you look at the way he acted while he was here, and you wish and dream that you could do that too. Can you imagine what it would be like to be you standing before your own executioner, knowing that it's going to happen, and without bravado or pride, just calmly state the fact that his so-called power has been merely delegated to him by your father? I would really like to have that kind of a chest, that dense of fortitude. Wouldn't you love to have the compassion of Christ so that you could enter into relationships, like even a risky one, without having shields up and without threat of injury? Yeah, you want that. You'd like that. And wouldn't you like, I mean, a will so dedicated that you would humiliate yourself in front of people that are not worthy without any regard for yourself? I mean, just like self-forgetfulness. That's like Christ. And that's how God wants you to be. That's your destiny, okay? That is your destiny. And it was arranged before time for you to look like Jesus or to be like Christ. And that's all the other things in life are a means to that end. Just about everything. Well, how does that happen? If that's the end, how does God get you there? Well, that's where the wax on, wax off comes in, right? Paint the fence, sand the floor. And here's what I want to propose, okay, to you today, is this. That the things that you resent the most, are most monotonous and painful, that rub against the grain of your soul and personality, are the very things that God has arranged so that you can be more like his son, so that you can look like Jesus. Those are there for a purpose. And what I'd like you to do before we even kind of go on any farther, I want you to think about some of the challenges in your life currently and in the past, some of the hardships in your life currently in the past, and maybe even some sufferings, independent of evil. Evil's like over here, but suffering. And I want you to, let's just kind of find them right now for just a second. I'll give you like 15 seconds, okay? Think about those things, those wax on, wax off things. In your head? All right. Now, here's what I want to do. I want to show you in the life of Abraham, okay, same guy. I want you to see how in his life, God is going to make him like Christ, and he's going to use his power, providence, as part of his plan to move him to places and in circumstances to help him become a deeper, truer believer. Okay? Now, to do that, we have to review a lot of last week, and I do that for a couple reasons. One is it was a holiday weekend, and we kind of switch audiences a lot of times. People leave, and other people come, and I want to make sure you get this. But more importantly, we're going to review last week because it's foundational for us to understand the life of Abraham. If we don't get the principles that we learned last week that we reviewed just now, then we can't build on this slab. So very quickly, let me review for you. When we said a believer, what it means to be a believer, that is a person who lives as though the promises of God are true. You can't just say you're a believer and live any way you want. You have to live in a risk daring way that shows that the reason you are doing thus and such is because you have a promise from God attached to that, and you have tethered yourself to that. And your conduct makes no sense unless you have this promise that you can hold to. Okay? Now, when we look at Abraham's life, we say, okay, what are those promises? If you'll turn in your Bibles to Genesis chapter 12, we'll look at our primary text there. Genesis chapter 12. Verse 1 says, and Jehovah came to Abram, and he said, leave your country, your people, your father's household, and go to the land that I will show you. And I will make you into a great nation, and I will bless you. I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing to other people. I will bless those who bless you. I will curse those who curse you. And all the peoples of the earth will be blessed through you. Okay? Last week, we kind of unpacked that, and we saw that God's promises are very much like our promises from God. There's a promise of provision. In Abram's case, it is for land and more. He says, and God says, I want to show you the land that I want to give you and your descendants. That's found in verse 1 and later verses as well. And then he also says that he wants to protect him. It says that throughout 1 through 3. He says, I will bless those who bless you, and I will curse those who curse you. I will be your big brother bodyguard that looks out for you. Don't you worry. And then lastly, he gave him purpose in life. He said, the world, I will make your descendants into a nation. And then he says particularly that the whole world will be blessed through you. And that's a promise that he makes to Abraham. Remember those three promises, because each of those promises will be put on display for God to just challenge Abram to see, will you live as though you are a believer, as though the promises that I've made to you are true? Now, last week we saw that the pattern of living as a believer, living is believing, we see that it starts off, as soon as the promise is given, with an action. And in the case of Abram, it says in verse 1, and Jehovah said to Abram, leave your country, your people, your father's household, and go to the land which I've shown you. In verse 4, and Abram left, as the Lord told him. And Lot went with him. Abram was 75 years old when he went out and set his way towards Haran. Now, why did he do that? Why does Abram leave certainty and safety and comfort to go where God tells him to go? And I would propose it's more than just obedience. I think there's so much deeper that's going on in this man's soul and in our soul. Let me put it this way. Abram had dreams that could not be fulfilled in his hometown of Ur. He had hopes and aspirations that far transcended what he was experiencing. He had all that he wanted in Ur, but not what he desired. What he desired was something where everything was within his grasp, do you see? And if you've ever lived in that context, you know that there's something missing in you, and it's something eternal and forever. And so God shows himself to Abram and says, there's so much more to your life if your life is not here. And so you will go on an adventure because that's the only place you can meet me. And so Abram leaves his comfort and his safety and his protective experience in Ur because he wants to be with God, and God will not be in Ur. And so he leaves. And I want you to see in literature in general, but in the Bible as well, particularly, when people leave a place of comfort, they are on a journey of their soul. There's a literal journey taking place, but there's a metaphysical soul journey taking place. You see this in other works of literature. Abram will leave a location and he will leave his old self there, and he will move on to become something more. If he stays, he's stagnant, soul speaking. If he leaves, there's something more for him. Well, he does leave. He leaves, and the next thing that happens a lot of times when you live like a believer, like his promises are true, is there's confirmation that follows. And that happens in verse 6. He shows up, and then in verse 7 it says, and then the Lord appeared to Abram and said, to your offspring I give this land. And so after this confirmation, Abram builds an altar right there and says, you know what? God's promises are true. I'm going to live that way. After that confirmation and after that altar is built, he continues to work his way south now. And he finds himself between two major landmarks, the town called Ai and another one, Bethel. And if you'll pick it up in verse 8, this is very important for our study today. Verse 8 of chapter 12, he ends up with worship and witness. Verse 8 says, from there he went towards the hills east of Bethel and pitched his tent with Bethel on his west and Ai on his east. There he built still another altar to Jehovah and called on the name of the Lord. Remember that. He called on the name of the Lord. He builds an altar and then starts preaching about God's promises of protection and provision and purpose. And it's right there between Ai and Bethel. Remember that. And then he does that as a form of remembering, because he'll need a place to mark in his journey of life to say, you know what, thus far I have trusted God and I'm safe and it's good. And so Abram's in a pretty good place. He's done what God's asked him to do. And then they lived happily ever after. No. There is so much more to do. If you could picture life like this, if life is purgatory, and it is, and all of life is, much of life is set up to prepare us to meet God, that we might be purified in this life to get ready for the next life, then if you could see life that way, then you can see and make sense out of some of the writings of C.S. Lewis in Mere Christianity, when he compares God, oddly enough, to a dentist. He says that when we go to a dentist for a toothache, we go there because we have pain and we think, okay, take care of this cavity. But the dentist says, fine, I'll do that, but I can't just leave it with the cavity getting fixed. I want to fix all your teeth. I want to clean and make well your whole mouth. So it is with God. We often go to God, it says, for things that are relatively embarrassing, you know, like maybe a temper or acts of cowardliness. Or sometimes we go to God to stop things that are destroying our life, like an addiction to alcohol, a drunkenness. And that's fine and well. That's okay. We go to God and say, hey, I'm a coward. I need courage. I've got these issues with alcohol, please help. And God says, well, fine. And I'll deal with your temper and all, but there's so much more. I want to fix it all. It's as though he says this. He says, come on in. But if you leave me alone, mark my words, I won't stop until you're perfect. I'll make you and form you in my image. I'll clean up everything that's anything dirty or out of line or inappropriate. I will make you like myself. Still another analogy by George MacDonald was that he said, it's like we come in and we ask God to add a little room to our house and he scrapes it to the slab and builds us a mansion. McDonald's uses still another illustration that says this, and I hope this is graphic for you. He says that God is like teaching us to walk. Let me just read it. Every father is pleased as the baby's first steps are attempted to walk, and no father would be satisfied with anything less than a firm, free, manly walk of a grown-up son. Sure, a father is pleased with first steps, but he can't leave it there. And this is the great line that George MacDonald quotes. He says, God is easy to please, but hard to satisfy. God is easy to please, but hard to satisfy. Visualize that in your life with God. He gets you to a place between Ai and Bethel. You build an altar. You worship God. You tell your friends it's a God thing. And he says, I am so easily pleased with that, but I'm not satisfied. Because there's so much more to do. There's work to be done. And so, with all that in mind, that sets up verse 10 for us. All of that context helps us understand what God is doing in Abram's life in verse 10. Now there was a famine in the land, and Abram went down to Egypt to live there for a while because there was a famine that was severe. God brought about a famine in the land, and what kind of famine?